The following program is paid for by Absolute Mortgage, a division of Pinnacle Capital Mortgage Corporation. Absolute Mortgage Company, NMLS number 81395, and Washington CL number 81395, is an equal opportunity housing lender. Tina Mitchell, MLO number 145420, is a licensed loan originator with Absolute Mortgage. Visit AbsoluteLoans.com or call 888-90-HOMES for cost information.
You're listening to The Money Hour with your host, Tina Mitchell. Sponsored by Absolute Mortgage, a division of Pinnacle Capital Mortgage Corporation. Now, in the studio, local mortgage and finance expert, Tina Mitchell.
Welcome to the Money Hour at 1150 AM KKNW, the Saturday, June 6th show. I am your host and mortgage expert, Tina Mitchell. I've built a network of elite industry professionals every week sharing their knowledge and expertise with my listeners. If you're hearing my show at a different time or day, you are listening to a rebroadcast, but I'm here to answer any questions or connect you with the guests that I have on the show today. Please call the show at 1-855-400-1150. Again, that's 1-855-400-1150 or online at themoneyhour.com. And the lineup for the show today, we have Wolf Pulse with Windermere Real Estate Yarrow Bay office. And what should a new real estate agent expect in a hot market like we're in today? And also in studio, Randy Banneker, Banneker Public Affairs, here to talk about housing prices and housing supply. So it's going to be a great, fun show today with my guest. And if you want any more information on the topics that you've heard today, again, you can call into the show at 1-855-400-1150. Again, that's 1-855-400-1150 or online at themoneyhour.com. And let's go ahead and start out the show today, as always, with a little money chat.
Money. Money.
Fed should delay interest rate hike until 2016, while the International Monetary Fund urged the Federal Reserve to wait until the first half of 2016 to start raising short-term interest rates because the U.S. economy remains subpar. In its annual checkup on the U.S. economy released Thursday, the IMF said the underpinning for continued growth and job creation remains in place, but America's momentum was sapped into recent months by a series of negative shocks, including a harsh winter and a strong dollar that hurts the U.S. exports. The IMF predicts that the U.S. economy will grow 2.5% this year, down from its April forecast of 3.1%. The agency said that the Fed should wait for more signs of improvement, especially greater signs of the wage and price inflation. The central bank has kept its key benchmark rate at the record lows near zero since December of 2008. Now, barring unexpected good news, the IMP said that the Fed should probably hold off until next year. Many private economists, however, speculate that the Fed will start raising rates this September. In a speech last month, Fed Chairman Janet Yellen said that the experts would begin raising rates by the end of the year. And the Fed stated that its most recent policy statement that it needs to be reasonably confident that inflation will move back up to the Fed 2% target. But the IMF said it doesn't see inflation reaching that level until the mid-2017. Now, U.S. consumer prices fell 0.2% in April from a year earlier, largely because of the plummeting of oil prices. Excluding volatility, food and energy prices, core inflation grew just 1.8% over the 12-month period. Now, the economy would be better off with a rate hike in early 2016, IMF Managing Director Christine Lagarde had said. Now, she also said the risk of raising rates too soon overweigh the risk of keeping the rates on hold and allowing inflation to slightly exceed the Fed's 2% target. The Commerce Department reported last week that the U.S. economy shrank at an annual rate of 0.7% from July through March. A rate widening trade deficit was largely to blame. Now, the stronger dollar makes U.S. exports more expensive overseas and foreign imports cheaper in America. After raising more than 20% against both the euro and the Japanese yen since June 30th, the U.S. dollar appears to be monetary overvalued, the IMF said. Now, the agency said the U.S. financial system is stronger than it was before the Great Recession, but warned of potentially serious threats to the stability. Now, and expressed concerns about the growth and so-called shadow banks, lightly regulated financial firms that operate outside the traditional banking system. It warned that insurance companies have tried to compensate for low interest rates by riskier investments and could be vulnerable in the financial panic. And if urged Congress not to roll to 2010's Dodd-Frank law, which strengthens financial regulation. So it'll be interesting to see what the feds do with the prime rate to slow down the economy. They'll want to increase prime, make it a little bit more expensive for us to purchase things like our cars and our credit cards to slow the economy, to speed up the economy. That's when they'll lower the actual prime rate. So it'll be interesting again to see what happens. It'll also be interesting, regardless of prime staying the same or increasing prime, the effect to interest rates, because a lot of times consumers think that mortgage rates are directly tied to the prime. They are not directly tied to prime. They're tied to the Fannie Mae 30-year bond. Sometimes it follows prime, depending on the Fed's, if it actually slows the economy down or not, will determine whether mortgage interest rates will stay where they are or increase. So again, time will tell. That's what I have for Money Chat. Coming up next on the Money Hour, what a hot market and great time for a career in real estate, especially in our local real estate market. Wolf Pulse with Windermere Real Estate Euro Bay is back in studio one more time right here on 1150 AM KKNW after the short break.
When the time comes to sell an aging parent's home, there are many questions that require a reassuring expert. Wolf Pulse, a local realtor from Windermere Real Estate for over 30 years, has special training and experience to make that transition less stressful for all. Call Wolf Pulse for a free consultation about preparing and selling your parent's home.
This is Wolf Pulse with Windermere Real Estate. You can reach me on my cell phone, 425-444-2787. Again, that's 425-444-2787.
This is the Money Hour with your host, Tina Mitchell, on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. Now, back to the show with local mortgage and finance expert, Tina Mitchell.
Welcome back to the Money Hour with your host and mortgage expert, Tina Mitchell, right here on 1150 AM KKNW, the Saturday, June 6th show. I am empowering our community, providing you with opportunities and solutions when it comes to your money. If you're listening to my show at a different time or day, you're listening to a rebroadcast, but you can always call the show at 1-855-400-1150 or online at themoneyhour.com to ask any questions or to connect with the guests that I have in studio today. And right now, excited to have back in studio Wolf Pulse with Windermere Real Estate Euro Bay office. And we're going to talk about real estate agents and what to expect coming into this hot real estate market that we're in, especially right here in the Seattle area. Well, thank you so much for joining me back in studio. Excited to have a conversation with you today.
It's my pleasure to be here. Thank you, Tina.
And a little bit about Wolf. Wolf, 31st year of real estate services, 28 years with the same company, Windermere Euro Bay office, Kirkland at Bellevue, specializing in residential resale homes and condos in all areas of the greater Puget Sound. 2012 president of 6,000 member local Realtor board, Seattle King County Realtors, 8-time selection as Seattle Magazine 5-star real estate agent, 2014. 2015 finalist as best of Kirkland Realtor and Kirkland Reporter. And he's married to, most important of his bio, married to Lindy Stewart for 27 years. And exciting news for Lindy, and sure, I'm sure for you as well, Wolf. She retires from her career in teaching in about 2 weeks after more than 40 years in the classroom. So I want to give a shout out to your wife and say thank you for all of the education that she's provided for our students here in our local market. And proud dog of Poncho, 8.5-year-old English Springer Spaniel, which those spaniels have quite a personality. Maybe he got it from you, Wolf.
Oh, I think he probably got it from his breeding there. He's a pretty
okay.
cool guy.
Yes. Yeah, they're awesome. Yeah. Awesome dogs. So excited to talk about the opportunity with people that are looking at getting in the real estate industry. A lot of times you see a lot of growth in this, especially when the market starts to get hot and crazy like it is right now. Are you seeing a large amount of new agents entering the business as the market has been changing?
Yeah, we are, Tina. You know, and actually, you're right. And when the market goes up, obviously, interest in a career in real estate becomes quite attractive to some people. And we've noticed here, I just looked at the statistics for the number of brokers that are registered with the MLS, Northwest MLS. And last year, from last year in May to this year in May, we had an increase of about 7% of new agents joining up. So that's quite a bit of people when you consider that the total is over 23,000. So, you know, not everybody's brand new. I think there's some people that are rejoining the industry as well, but certainly a lot of people new to the business, and it's you know, it's an interesting time for them to be in. I think from my perspective, I notice names on real estate signs that I don't recognize, and I've been, as you mentioned, I've been in the business more than a couple of years, so I recognize a few people. So definitely an increase in the number.
So out of that 7%, that you said that is a combination of agents that are brand new and ones that are coming back after the meltdown.
Right.
Yeah, because there I know a lot that have came back in after it. So let's talk about, I mean, right now being a good time, if you chose starting all over your career right now, would you rather start your new career as a real estate agent in a hectic, crazy, I can't even, it's so crazy right now, market, or would you think it would be better to start when things are a little bit calmer?
Well, you know, ideally there always be, you know, if there was such a thing as a balanced market, that's when you'd want to get in.
Yes.
Unfortunately, we don't really seem to have a balanced market. We either have a seller's market or a buyer's market, and occasionally it goes to a little bit more normalcy. So as far as I go back, I think it's actually, and this may be interesting, I think it's actually a good time to go in because what you learn trial by fire is probably going to serve you better in the long run. I'll give you an example. When I started my real estate career back in 1985, the interest rates were in excess of 12% to buy homes. I had no idea what that meant. I just went in and tried to, you know, service my clients and sell homes to people and made it work. And so I think someone that doesn't have anything to compare it to, it's relatively normal, if you will.
Yeah. And I think you talk about balance. I mean, it's either a seller's market or a buyer's market. And you know, life is balanced. So it's either going to be a challenging market in some fashion because of the challenges we're dealing with, lack of inventory and just, you know, just going really fast.
Right.
Or it's going to be a challenged market because it's just slow and there's not as much business, but it's going to weigh itself out to the challenges and the successes and the opportunities. It's just how you look at that. You know, what about getting in and coming underneath another agent that's established and kind of watch what they're doing and be able to learn the ropes before just jumping in on your own? Do you advise that that's a smart way to go?
I think it's an excellent way to go because I think that, you know, and I'll be real honest with you. I think it's much more complex these days, even though we have technology.
Yes.
Things are moving at a much, much faster pace, and getting the getting the background of what the historical part of the real estate. When I got in the business, I had a mentor. It wasn't an official mentor, but I kind of hung along and learned a lot of things and went to open houses and did all the things that real estate agents did those days. So I think that aligning oneself with another agent, perhaps even starting out as a agent's assistant might be a good way to go without diving in on 100%. Because it's very expensive to get into the business.
And that's a good point, because I think a lot of people, they don't think about that part of it. I mean, you are an entrepreneur. You're starting your own business. There's no salary. So it can be stressful when you're not having that income come in and you actually have to spend income to get your business going. So what advice would you give to a new agent, or what would they need to know getting into the business right now, Wolf?
Well, basically, I think that there's things that you have to be totally aware of, and that comes from perhaps interviewing other brokers, successful brokers, going in and talk to the broker managers. But I think you have to be aware, one, of the cost, as you mentioned. You know, it's you have to spend money ahead of time, get established. You have dues to pay for the MLS. You have licenses to pay for. Certainly all the other things, signs, lock boxes and all that. They all add up. So that's a costly thing to consider. But those things can all be handled with some planning. The other thing is time commitment.
Yes.
And I'm speaking not so much the time commitment that you as an individual have, but the time that you lose, perhaps, from your spouse or your family. Mm-hmm. You have to try to keep that balance, because if you don't, it can really wreak havoc at the home front.
Makes total sense. Now, let's talk about area, and maybe balance comes into this in some fashion. Would you have a... would your advice be to a new real estate agent to work on one specific area and focus on a neighborhood, or should they be more open to work with any clients that come within, you know, the area that they're at?
It kind of depends. If you have if you've grown up in, like, for example, if you've grown up in the Seattle area, you know your way around, you feel comfortable working in other areas, mm-hmm. Other than kind of your home base, if you will. But I think let's take, for example, you own a condominium and you own a condominium downtown.
Uh-huh.
Well, maybe that's where you'd want to start and make that kind of your base, and because that's where your expertise would be.
Yes.
You know what it's like to be a condominium owner. You know the pluses, some of the things that might not, you know, the negatives of that. And you might have the ability to speak more eloquently to your buyers and sellers about what it is that you're doing. Now, that being said, if someone called you up and you're a condominium specialist and someone called you up and said, geez, I'd really like you to market my property in Green Lake, uh-huh. certainly, you know, that's everyone's qualified to do that, because when you have a license to practice real estate in the state of Washington, you can actually sell anywhere within the geographic boundaries.
Yeah, and I think I like the idea of specializing for the reason that you just said, and we talk about balance as well, that they can really focus and their time and their energy in one area. And I think sometimes even our established and seasoned realtors try to go to all areas where, yeah. you know, really it's just a matter of, you can just take a 25% split on the commission, let somebody else do that, go out to that area and have those team players. And I know I'm part of the Women's Council of Realtors, you know, SCAR teaches well, really it's about coming together as a community and building those partnerships with other realtors that are in other markets that you can exchange business back and forth. And I would imagine if a Seattle realtor, Wolf, was had you as a referral opportunity to refer business on the east side, and every time they had an east side client, they're coming your way, when you've got an opportunity to someone back their way, it would be the same thing.
Very true. Now I do work a lot in Seattle myself, but
of course.
I'll give you an example of right going to your example, last year I listed and sold a home over in Hartstein Island over by Shelton.
Uh-huh.
But it was by the understanding, and these were previous clients of mine, the understanding that we would have limited ability. In other words, when you're out of flyers, I can't quite be there the next morning and
makes
do
total
that.
Sense.
However, when one of my Facebook friends noted that I had sold a home over there, they had a cabin to sell in the general uh-huh. area. And at that time, I got smart and I referred it to one of the Windermere brokers working that specific area.
Yes.
It's just very time consuming.
Yeah, makes total sense. So, Wolf, what about the dollars? How much should a new agent spend to market their business and their listings?
I'm going to go out and be a little, perhaps a little bit controversial here and say
okay.
as little money as possible. And by that, I mean, it's easy to get into the negative of your bank account.
Mm-hmm.
If you're, you know, when someone says, geez, you've got to do lots of heavy duty marketing. And I mean, there's an agent's always solicited for heavy duty advertising and all that stuff. And it's great. But there's a lot of social media marketing that one can mm-hmm. do, a lot of marketing that does not cost a lot of money,
mm-hmm.
but also has a great impact both for yourself as your business, but also for the listings that you have and getting them out on the web.
You know, great advice. When we've got the MLS where all the properties are going to, everybody has access to see all of the properties. Maybe more importantly is just to have the expertise to be able to coach your clients on what they need to do to that house for
sure.
it to show best online and in person, rather than, you know, spending your energy and extra efforts on the additional dollar cost for marketing. So, Wolf, we all know starting in a new business, and it's not always easy, and you might get in here and it doesn't really take off. There's some stress you weren't anticipating, the costs coming in and not having that salary. How long really would you advise somebody, you know, if you've come in and you've gotten into the market, you need to give it about this amount of time to see how things come together before you make a decision that it was the wrong move and you quit?
My ideal time would be for someone to spend at least 1 year in the business.
Makes
team,
sense.
You know, and the reason for that is obviously there's a lot to learn, you know, and there's going to be successes and there may be some failures. Like you said, you know, even if you got into the business today, sold a house tomorrow, mm-hmm. your first paycheck probably isn't going to come for anywhere from 4 to 8 weeks from now. So uh-huh. you've got to have some reserves or some ability or perhaps a spouse that can carry you for a little while. But 1 year, I would think, would be a good enough time to say, hey, I really enjoy working with people. Mm-hmm. I'm not afraid of the disappointments, and it's working out for me. So with that being said, I'm on my 31st one-year assignment, and I'm still here. I like it. It's working.
That's awesome. 31st one-year assignment. I love it. Yeah, I don't know how I would have made it 20 years ago starting in the mortgage business without, you know, some security there with my spouse. So like you said, you know, just having those reserves, saving up some money to know that you've got that cushion for 3-6 months, make sure you're good and you're not going to have to, you know, stress about money, because it'll come if you continue working it and you don't give
Absolutely.
Up, but you've got to have those reserves to make it through it. So best piece of advice that you could give to anybody listening to the show right now, Wolf, thinking of entering this amazing business of ours.
If someone's thinking about real estate as a career, and I'd encourage people to do that because it is a great career.
Yes.
I think that, one is you want to learn, or not learn, but just be yourself with clients. Mm-hmm. People relate to other people that they, you know, that they like and have common things in place. You're not in there for sales. You're there to consult, advise, mm-hmm. and direct and help people in that way. The other thing is make sure that you're patient.
Yes.
Patient with clients, patient with yourself, patient with other agents, and you'll be successful. And also to become a good listener. And the last thing is smile even when it hurts.
And I, you know, smiling even when it hurts is better for the connection that you're going to have with your client. And we all know that. But I think as important, and even more so, it's better that you're going to have with the connection with yourself and your experience in doing this. Because just like you said, there's going to be stressful times. There's going to be some great times. So make the decision to focus on the great ones and not focus on the stressful ones. Just let those kind of go away. And if you've got a good smile on your face, it's much easier to do that.
Much easier.
Much easier. So 31 years in the industry for you selling real estate or being a successful real estate agent, 20 years for me in the mortgage business, I know that I made some mistakes and things that I look back now and gone, you know what, if I would have done it this way, it would have made that first 12 months or 24 months in the industry much easier. What things would you do differently if you look back 31 years when you started?
I think I probably would have taken a little bit more risk. Maybe by that I mean going out and from a personal point, I probably would have been more of an investor, because one of the beauties of being a real estate broker is you have tremendous amounts of opportunities come your way.
Uh-huh.
And if you get so busy, caught up in selling and listing homes, you miss some great opportunities. And later on, you kind of go, oh my gosh, you know, I remember that place I could have got. And,
sure.
you know, now, you know, it's worth X amount. I mean, I'll give you a real quick example. Bought an investment property when I first got into the business, a small condominium down on the lake down in Kirkland, and I paid what I at the time was a princely sum of $53,375.
Wow.
Well, today I still have it as an investment property, and mm-hmm. it's somewhere in the 350 to 375 range. So I was kicking myself for not buying a half a dozen of those, but then maybe the timing wasn't right. So you know, hindsight's always 20/20.
Sure.
And maybe when I say risk is just kind of be willing to maybe go out and try some different things. But it's been a good career.
Yeah.
Real rewarding.
That's a great advice for the new ones. Just really, you know, take a look at when you're talking with your clients and educating what's happening in the market. Always be thinking for yourself as well, because we want to build our nest egg. And real estate, unlike any other investment or any other asset class, you can't compete with it, because it's the only one you can actually bring someone else in to pay for it.
Exactly.
And eventually, you just have a cash flow property. So that's it would be nice to have a lot more. I totally agree. I wish we did as well. So aside from the ability to earn really great money, what are the rewards that you have taken from your career in real estate wealth?
It may sound a little corny, but truly for me, it's always been that I've always valued seeing clients, people that I meet, turn into homeowners.
Yeah.
And the rewarding part, how that comes back to me is if I've sold them a house. Now at this point in my career, I'm working with the grandchildren of some mm-hmm. of the people I sold houses to in the 80s and early 90s. And, you know, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, when someone calls up and goes, hey, you know, remember us, you sold us our first, you know, home mm-hmm. back in 1991. Well, you know, my grandkids just got married and they want to buy a house,
yeah.
you know? And so that's really, it is truly a people business, you mm-hmm. know, yeah, houses and property are one thing, but it is the relationships and how that helps you grow.
Yes.
As a person. So it's been good.
Yeah. And after all of those time and working, as you say, going through and working with the different family members and, you know, we really are making a huge impact in people's lives and helping them get into home ownership, whether it's their first home or buying their first investment property or continuing to build their portfolio. What advice would you give to agents as far as how to work with, because you want to work with anybody when you're new in the business and you really want to get out there and you know, do everything that you can to get that deal. The reality of it is not all deals go perfectly. And especially when you're new in the business, there's going to be mistakes made. You cannot avoid having a mistake made at some point in time in your career, more likely when you first start. What's your advice in working with your direct family members or selling a house or with your best friend? I mean, what would be your advice there?
Personally, I think it's just fine. And the reason I say that is that I think that if you are upfront and you explain to your friends mm-hmm. and family members of how the business works for you, then you can relate that to them and say, okay, we're going to have to separate this a little bit. This isn't going to be a family situation. It's going to be myself as the agent and you as the client.
Uh-huh.
And so therefore, we can't let those emotions override the business part of it. But I've never had an issue with that. I think the problems come when sometimes the expectations are too high on either side.
Great advice, you know, just letting them know up front. And if you're a new agent, if I'm sure that they know you're new in the the industry, as you know, nobody cares about you more than I do. I mean, we are family. I'm your friend, but you know, this is exactly how the process works. And you know, I like not to get connected on the emotional side with it. It's great advice. So your wife getting ready to retire as an educator coming up within 2 weeks. How about you, Wolf? How much longer are you going to be selling real estate? Because I know you guys have your amazing place in Chelan and like to spend time there. What are you thinking? What's your plan?
This is my official opportunity to say that Wolf is not retiring.
You're not?
No. A lot of people on Facebook,
what?
You know, they go, well, don't you get to retire as well?
Uh-huh.
No, I still love what I'm doing, and
yeah.
I think I'd probably drive her crazy. So I'm going to be around for a few more years. And the beauty of this business, again, mm-hmm. is that you can do it on a somewhat flexible basis mm-hmm. if you need to. So she's going to have a good time. I think she's going to spend about a year just kind of sitting back, and then she's going to mm-hmm. find out what she wants to do next, volunteer work or you know, something like that.
Yeah, well, that's great. And I'm in the same place as you. As you know, my husband just recently retired. He's left for Ecuador to go take a look at some property over there just as a little place to hang out here and there. And I'm going to be working for many, many more years. So I completely understand where you're at. And, you know, so any other advice, Wolf, that you would have for new agents right now?
I think if you're considering getting into the business, what I would advise is that make sure that you get some training and do some informational interviews with brokers and owners and tell them exactly where your situation is and then make your decision from there.
Yeah. And so on the timing, because there is licensing, you get licensed to be a realtor and there's a lot of education. How do you feel about going through some of that process and way ahead of time and getting that all lined up before you actually start getting into the market and selling? I mean, is that a good strategy or if you're in a position to do that?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously you got to be licensed before you go sell, but there's a lot of additional classes and things that you can get yourself prepared
Well, I think, you know, once you get the basics, you're pretty much wanting to, you know, just get out there and do some sales. Obviously, you're going to have continuing education all along the way and things that help you become better. But really, your best education is actually doing the business, as in most businesses.
Makes sense. New agent going into a listing or talking with a buyer that asks how long you've been in the real estate industry. How would you advise as a benefit and a plus, letting them know, hey, I just got in the real estate industry, but, or?
Always be honest. Mm-hmm. I think that if you build trust and you come prepared, it doesn't matter if you've been in the business 1 year or 31 years. If they trust you, they'll work with you.
Yeah, great advice. Well, thank you so much.
And I'm
a great segment for people looking at making a career change, and definitely selling real estate is a great career, an opportunity to make some good money.
It is.
And build some great long-term friendships and partnerships throughout the year.
Great. Thanks, Tina.
Look forward to having you back.
Okay, I'll be here.
Coming up next to the Money Hour, what's happening with our housing market and housing supply? Randy Banneker with Banneker Public Affairs right here at 1150 AM KKNW after this short break.
When the time comes to sell an aging parent's home, there are many questions that require a reassuring expert. Wolf Pulse, a local realtor from Windermere Real Estate for over 30 years, has special training and experience to make that transition less stressful for all. Call Wolf Pulse for a free consultation about preparing and selling your parent's home.
This is Wolf Pulse with Windermere Real Estate. You can reach me on my cell phone, 425-444-2787. Again, that's 425-444-2787.
This is the Money Hour with your host, Tina Mitchell, on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. Now, back to the show with local mortgage and finance expert, Tina Mitchell.
Welcome back to the Money Hour with your host and mortgage expert, Tina Mitchell, right here on 1150 AM KKNW, the Saturday, June 6th show. My goal is to keep you up to date on the latest news and trends in our local economy. Keep me tuned in and I will keep you informed. If you're listening to my show at a different time or day, you are listening to a rebroadcast. To talk with any of the guests that I have in studio today, have any questions for them, please call the show at 1-855-400-1150. Again, that's 1-855-400-1150 or online at themoneyhour.com. And my last guest in studio today, Randy Banneker with Banneker Public Affairs. And Randy's here to talk with us about housing prices and housing supply. Randy, thank you for coming back into studio. Excited to have a conversation with you today.
Great to be back. Thank you, Tina.
And a little background about Randy. Randy is president of Banneker Public Affairs. Randy has been engaged in our region's critical issues for more than 20 years. He has extensive experience advocating complex, highly visible, and controversial land use and public policy initiatives. Randy is a leader in the region's business community and has a strong record of community service, which includes co-chair policy committee of the Great Seattle Chamber of Commerce, President V Academy Board of Trustees, past chair Bellevue Chamber of Commerce, and past president Seattle City Club. Prior to forming Banneker Public Affairs, Randy held government affairs positions at Washington Natural Gas, Puget Sound Energy, and the Rocky Company, now Hill and Knowlton. So I'm really excited to talk with you about the housing prices, supply, you know, because it's kind of an area that people are definitely thinking about, whether you're in the real estate market, thinking about real estate or not. It's a big conversation that's happening. So home prices continue to rise in the greater Seattle area and among the nation's highest. What's going on and why are we seeing so much increase in our real estate market, Randy?
Well, you're right, Tina. You know, we are among the nation's leaders in our price appreciation at about, you know, we're in the high single digits, low double digits, just month, the 12-month price increase going back from May was 9% in our market. And what's important to remember is, you know, we aren't a market that took a big drop during the recession. Mm-hmm. Other markets did. So our price increase is building on this solid platform. The good news is that our market is propelled by a really healthy economy.
Yes.
We've had strong job growth. The bad news is that we have very severely restricted supply.
Yes.
So whereas you'd be looking for, in a balanced market, you'd be looking for about a 4 to 6 month supply of, mm-hmm, of homes mm-hmm. for sale. You know, we're at about 1.3 months. And in some neighborhoods, in some hot neighborhoods, Bellevue, Seattle, Kirkland, it's less than a month.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously with that supply restriction, that limited inventory, demand's outstripping supply, yeah. and prices are going skyward.
And what do you think, obviously for sellers and rising in house prices, this is really great news for our sellers.
Well, it is, unless you're a seller that's a move-up
buyer
and,
yes.
and you want to stay in the same market. Mm-hmm. And so then it remains a challenge for you, both at that economic level, but then also just your options.
Yeah. And isn't that one of the reasons, that we're lack of inventory is just people that are looking at moving move-up buyers in a normal market with more inventory, they would definitely be moving, especially because the cost to borrow is so inexpensive. But the problem is a lot of them are just, they're nervous about putting their home on the market, afraid that they're not going to be able to find something else. Or looking out there, they can't see anything else that makes sense for their family and what they're trying to accomplish. So they're just holding on and not selling.
Absolutely. It's a real challenge.
Uh-huh.
And so, just coming out of the recession, you had people who probably were sitting on the sidelines for that price appreciation
yes.
to get them back in the black in terms of an equity position.
Mm-hmm.
I think for the most part, we're beyond that. You would know
Agreed.
Better than I.
I agree, yes.
But now we have this exact situation you described where we need to have some product for those move-up buyers to go to.
Yeah, got to find some encouragement. And it's just the lack of property out there. Yeah, isn't it funny? Maybe funny, not funny. You know, when we didn't have people weren't buying, but there was no equity in people's homes, so they couldn't sell without, you know, giving up equity, or they were giving the properties back to the bank, so obviously not in a position to go buy, and they were renting. And the sellers that did hold onto their properties, they've got all this equity now, but can't find the house to move up. So yeah, interesting times, definitely. So there's a lot of talk about the need for increased subsidies to create affordable housing. Is that a solution?
Well, let me tackle the non-subsidies first. And,
okay,
and this is
okay.
the last bit of data I'm going to throw your way. But if you
I know
your
data's guy, go right ahead. I'm sure my listeners appreciate it.
So we were just talking about the move-up buyers. Well, mm-hmm. when the move-up buyers can't move up, the first-time buyers have many fewer options because, again,
yes.
that moderately priced home is not available to them. And so if you just look at, we're going to just talking countywide, the median home sold price as of May was $434,000. And that's a blended number of condos and single-family.
Okay,
attached.
All right.
Looking at the median county income, they can afford somewhere around $280,000 worth of house.
Mm,
and that
mm-hmm.
leaves a gap of 150-something.
Yep.
That gap is growing. And so the question is, how do we accommodate those folks?
Yes.
In practical terms, what they're doing is they are contacting someone like Wolf, your previous mm-hmm. guest, and they're getting in a car and they're driving until they can qualify
yes.
and for a home. That's a trend that we need to keep an eye on because it's not a good trend.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's a trend that that can begin to push on the integrity of the community, the quality of the community.
Sure.
On the subsidized piece, we're seeing a lot in the press about the need for greater subsidies. And I think just relating to what we were talking about, you know, the housing market is a continuum. It's interrelated. And so if you add a new house in any part of that spectrum, from the super affordable to the super expensive,
uh-huh.
You're going to help. You're going to ease that demand. You're going to improve the supply.
Sure.
Ease the demand, and that will ease price pressure pretty much everywhere up and down the continuum.
Mm-hmm.
So greater housing options help everybody, fewer hurt everybody. And where we are now in terms of the folks in need of affordable housing is that, you know, when you have the demand outstripping the supply, the market's almost like a game of musical chairs, where where those with the financial wherewithal get a chair and others do not.
Yes.
And so the way to change the dynamic is to add more chairs. The first thing you want to do is add some more chairs, get some more supply, or in this case, more housing units into the market. Yeah. And then secondly, take a look at strategies to help those who are struggling to find that chair.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of strategies available. But again, I think the first thing to tackle is, do we have adequate supply at the market level?
Okay. And, you know, what are some of the some of those strategies, Randy?
Well, there are a lot of them. I think, first of all, what we need to do is look at where we can add housing in a way that is a benefit to the community.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about the greater Seattle market, we are introducing a lot of making a lot of transportation investments. With
yeah, we
Sound
are.
Transit,
yes, and I've had them in studio quite a few times. It's really exciting, actually, what's coming up.
Right, mm-hmm. and with those, there are Sound Transit station area development
yep.
programs.
Yes,
around those stations is a great opportunity for high density residential development.
Okay.
We've seen some cities really step up and embrace that idea. And then we've seen other cities say, you know what, we don't want to go as big as we could go
uh-huh.
in terms of that density, in terms of those heights and that the intensity of that use.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we're making a mistake that's going to last many years into the future. Because limiting those spaces where new development, high intensity development is appropriate
mm-hmm.
means that we're further pushing that housing demand around the region
yeah,
in ways
makes total sense, Randy.
In ways that are tougher to manage in terms of transportation.
Yes.
People's access mm-hmm. getting from where I live to where I work gets tougher.
So where are some of the affordable housing opportunities right now, Randy, that that can people look? Where are you seeing those going up now?
Well, you know, we're seeing some cities develop new neighborhoods that are not the perfect product for everyone, but
mm-hmm.
that injection of particularly a multifamily, creating a multifamily neighborhood, and I'm talking about South Lake Union, downtown
okay.
Bellevue,
mm-hmm.
downtown Kirkland. Now, it's easy to take those neighborhoods for granted, but take a walk through South Lake Union and imagine what that neighborhood was like only 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Imagine
yes.
what downtown Bellevue was
yeah.
like when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Totally different.
Yes.
And so what's happened is that we've added with commercial office and with multifamily,
mm-hmm.
we've taken a community that had relatively few options
mm-hmm.
for the individual. And now has many.
Yes.
Entertainment, dining, all of those
mm-hmm.
things. Now, the question is it affordable? A lot of the new construction is not going to be affordable, but the people who are living in that new construction now
mm-hmm.
are leaving a place that is probably affordable.
Yeah. And some situations, I mean, look what's happened with our rent. I literally just had a client was in my office a couple nights ago, $700. And I didn't realize, I thought in Seattle that there was limits as far as you could raise rent. Rent went up $700 a month. He was paying $1,000 for this room. And what happened, you see this happening or hear about it all the time. It's he was renting a basement room from someone that owned the house, and she sold the house, and a new owner came in and said, $1,000, what? That's crazy. This is worth $1,700, and immediately increased his rent to $1,700. Now, he did have 90 days, so maybe that's where the key is in that maximum limit that you can have. I don't know. That's not my arena. But so a lot of people are getting forced out in rental because they're just going up so quickly, and all these multiple offers that are happening on rentals.
Right.
It's crazy.
You know, you're right, and what we're seeing, which is a troubling trend, is that many of the individual owners of a single family detached house that
uh-huh.
is available for rent, or a duplex, or mm-hmm. a fourplex, or a sixplex, often those are again, individual families who have held that as an investment.
Yes.
Being a rental property owner is getting increasingly difficult in some cities like Seattle.
Okay.
Because the regulation, the regulatory activity is increasing.
Okay.
And it's forcing those folks to sell. And when they do sell, the price that, the sales price that commands forces the new buyer to increase rents.
Yeah, makes sense.
And it's really no one's fault. It's what's happening in the marketplace as our region grows. But again, it kind of comes back to, as a region, we need to recognize that we've got to accommodate people. We're happy to take on jobs, but
we've got to make sure they have a place to live and it's affordable.
A job goes home after work, and it goes home to a house or an apartment, and we've got to make sure those places are there for
makes
people.
Makes total sense. Now, there's a lot of cranes, new housing projects everywhere that you look, and yet prices continue to rise. So does that suggest that the increased supply will not solve the problem?
I think it tells you that we need a better way to match demand, that we have to adjust zoning in a way that is more more real time in terms of meeting demand. For instance, we could be watching job growth and we could have that as an important input to our zoning.
Okay.
And by zoning, I mean, are we allowing enough units to be built? Again, in those appropriate places.
Of course. So how do you make communities more dense without diminishing the high quality of life that is such a hallmark in our region, Randy?
Well, you know, we talked about that a little bit. I think you can have density and you can have a high quality of life. And we talked about some examples of that. South Lake Union, downtown Bellevue, downtown Kirkland. Those are really exciting places to be. And they're places that have become much more dense in terms of their residential growth. We need to think more about that. And we've got opportunities. Keep an eye on the historic downtown Redmond, Over Lake Village, and Issaquah. Those three neighborhoods have very bold plans to add commercial office and residential and to really transform from what they began as, you know, just a suburban community and small town to something that's going to be a job center and a residential center.
Okay.
Need to promote that and support that.
Yeah. So what about any other specific things that cities can do in what they should be exploring?
Well, think about creating an abundance of land for housing. And that's not how we think about housing right now. And that's not how cities think. Typically, the pressure from community groups is shut the growth down. And we need to think about it in another way. We need to look at what land do we have available that would be appropriate for housing. It can be a very difficult conversation, but it is a conversation that we need to have. We need to increase the zone capacity, as we mentioned. And that can be done through heights, principally. Again, a difficult conversation. Upzone those areas that are adjacent to transit centers.
Okay.
We talked a little bit about that. And there are also a lot of opportunities, I think, as we transform our commercial arterials to think about some low-rise residential around these arterials in a way that activates the street in a positive way with commercial, maybe ground-level retail residential over, but then also buffers that arterial commercial activity from the neighborhood, from the single-family detached neighborhood, and in that way, it's a win-win. You're creating some options for people who currently don't have them, and you're protecting that single-family neighborhood, which is again a very important piece of our community.
Yeah. So, Randy, what happens if the region does not take steps to solve this problem?
Well, it puts us in a risk at risk in several ways. You know, first, it creates this hourglass type of a community where the people who can live here are wealthy enough to afford the high price, high cost of housing, or they their incomes are low enough that they qualify for subsidized housing. That idea sends the middle class packing.
Yeah,
they have to travel far to find a place that they can afford. And people who can't afford to live near their jobs and they're driving until they qualify, that creates sprawl.
Yeah.
And from an environmental perspective, we've had that discussion. We've said, no, we want to save the environment. Mm-hmm. We don't want to sprawl.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to sprawl being bad for the environment, it's not a great quality of life for the individual because you're spending less time with family. It's less time you can...
And you're commuting during really stressful time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, you know, where are the little league coaches if they're stuck on the freeway?
Exactly.
We don't want that. And ultimately, if you really play that out, employers will go to where the people are. The employer will go to where they can find people. And that raises questions about our sustained economic vitality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's not a trend that you want to pursue because it brings some fragility into the whole economic discussion.
So if I have somebody that's listening, Randy, right now, and they really want to be a part of the solution, what would you say would be their call to action?
Well, your listeners can be very influential, and I would encourage them to be a part of the discussion. Discussion about housing and growth and community planning is happening in every city in our region.
Yep.
And it's easy to participate in that discussion. It's important that voices emerge that are really thoughtful and look to that win-win where we can accommodate our growth, but mm-hmm. also in doing so create a great community. And there are a lot of self-interests that you should be pursuing in that idea. And probably the most important one is making sure you have a place where your kids can live.
Yes.
That is near you, but maybe not in your basement.
Mm-hmm.
And also having a place where you can move to once you're an empty nester. So
yes.
That's going to be a really big issue, over the next many years.
Mike Wolfe's got his nice place in Chelan, and what an amazing place to have a second home.
For an invitation, right?
Yeah, I've been waiting for the invitation to head over there.
It's open.
Yeah.
Consider it open.
So, since we've got both of you on mic here, what is your, Wolf, let's start with you. What is your prediction of what you think is going to happen in the next 12 months in our local real estate market and maybe over the next 5 years?
Well, let's start with the 12 months.
Okay.
I think it's going to be more of the same.
Mm-hmm.
By that, I mean we're going to struggle with getting more inventory online and some of the points that Randy made for the reasons why we're not getting more inventory online.
Uh-huh.
You know, if I was planning to purchase another home right now, and I hear this a lot of times from prospective sellers that would become buyers, they're very, very concerned that, hey, you know, with the market being as good as it is, we'll sell our house in a week, and then we've got 30 days, and how are we going to find something else?
Yes.
So until something opens up, and because no one takes contingent offers these days. I mean, that's history. So that's 12 months, 5 years. My crystal ball is a little cloudy, but I'm going to say we're going to have a very, very... This area has a great economy, and it continues to be a draw for people from all around the world because of not just the economy, but the quality of life here.
Yes. And Randy, what about you? What are your thoughts as far as, I mean, in your arena and everything that you're doing on your end, what do you see the future for our real estate market short and long term?
Well, I would agree with Wolf. I would add that for buyers and sellers, this market remains challenging to work in. And I think it really underscores the need to be working with a professional.
Yes, definitely.
Professional realtor like Wolf, someone who understands the whole financing picture, critical.
Yes.
The 5-year plan, I'm bullish. I think people are going to recognize that there is a level of quality and excitement in some of these emerging neighborhoods.
Okay.
That we talked about.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think they're going to want it for their neighborhood.
Yes.
And I think that's going to start to happen. in really exciting ways.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you. And I think when Sound Transit and all that starts, the exciting things, I know we've got a lot to wait for until coming up in 2030, which is a long time, but there's a lot of more recent things coming up that I think it'll be exciting for our market, our economy, and for housing. So I think there's a lot of good things coming forward. And I think there's a lot of amazing things coming up in the Eastern Washington area as well, because people want to get those second homes. And it's, I mean, this is an area to where we can have everything we want with the seasons that we have right across.
Well, that's true. The second home market has done an incredible rebound.
Yes.
So if you're looking for Central Washington, you know who to call.
There you go. You give Wolf a call, definitely.
I like the sunshine there as well. No, but
it's,
I like
it's
it here
amazing.
As well.
The sunshine and the snow. You get the
not enough snow last year, and it didn't get to Mission Ridge at all. But when it's good, it's good.
Exactly. Well, thank you both. Randy, I appreciate you coming back in studio. It was always an interesting conversation talking with you, and I appreciate your expertise and input. And Wolf, again, thank you for you coming in. And look forward to having both of you.
Thank
both
you
of
very
back.
Much.
Yeah, our pleasure. Thank you.
And this is your host, mortgage and mortgage expert, Tina Mitchell, signing off for the day. Thank you for being here today. Same time next weekend, same place, right here on 1150 AM KKNW. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
The preceding program is paid for by Absolute Mortgage, a division of Pinnacle Capital Mortgage Corporation. Absolute Mortgage Company, NMLS number 81395, and Washington CL number 81395, is an equal opportunity housing lender. Tina Mitchell, MLO number 145420, is a licensed loan originator with Absolute Mortgage. Visit absoluteloans.com or call 888-90-HOMES for cost information.